Session number 12778.
General Martin, rail 9.
Then when you do not expect to have a rest and you are ordered into a battle again the next day. We got down to a place called Herselt, not very far from the Albert Canal, at about midday. The situation was that 69 Brigade were already down there and had the previous day got a bridgehead across the canal, which had been itself a fairly hazardous business, because I think they only had two assault boats to get the whole brigade across, but they'd somehow achieved it. But they were now getting fairly heavily shot up from the flanks. And the brigadier told me that he was going to send out two patrols from 60 LI to southeast of the bridgehead, but on our own side of the canal, to try and divert attention from 69 Brigade. So I sent one section machine guns, one gun only with each of the DLI patrols, and they had a lot of fun doing tip-and-run tactics. Right along the canal there's this embankment which shelters one from view from the other side, and there's an embankment, of course, the other side, which the enemy had to be on if they were going to keep observation on the canal itself. And so what would happen was that the gun crews would assemble their guns behind the bank, then slide them very quietly up to the top, shoot at anything they saw, and then get back behind the bank again, move further along, and repeat the process. And they were able to get a German anti-tank gun crew, which were basking in the sun, and shoot them up, which was very satisfying. But in the afternoon, early afternoon, I was summoned to an urgent conference with the brigade commander at 8DLI HQ, and told that it had been decided that 8DLI should form a bridgehead across the Albert Canal about 1,000 yards to the right of where 69 Brigade were. And it was to be done the same afternoon at a village called Steelen. And I was to get one of my platoons to support this operation, the actual assault crossing, and then to go and reorganize, consolidate with 8DLI once they were across. Well, we got down to Steelen, and I remember seeing a number of nuns around. I don't know if there was a convent there, but there were flags up everywhere. They obviously thought they had been liberated. But then, as they saw us appear and assault boats appear, and they could obviously see from where they were what was the other side of the river, the canal, they started to take their flags in and put the shutters in all the windows. Well, I got the fire platoon to put one section of machine guns either side of the crossing point, and it was to be a silent attack, no artillery support. And we adopted the business of mounting the guns on their tripods behind the bank, and then as the assault went, assaulting troops got up to the top of the bank to cross with their boats across the river, we slid our guns forward and ready to engage targets. And one of the assault boats got hit straight away by a German Spandau machine gun. And fortunately, one of our sections spotted it very quickly and fired at the machine gun position, which the Germans had revetted with 75 mm artillery shell boxes, but without taking the shells out. And so there was a mammoth explosion. And the whole of that position blew up. And the machine gun and the gunner were deposited in the canal. So that went well, and 8 DLI got across and formed a defensive position. So we now had 69 Brigade on the left, a gap of about 1,000 yards, and then 8 DLI. And it was decided that 6 DLI should go across next morning, the 9th of September, and head for a place called Giel. And this became known as the Battle of the Giel Bridgehead.
G-W-E-L?
G-H-W-E-L. And I think it was one of the most exciting, and from our point of view, machine gun point of view, one of the most satisfying little battles that I was engaged in during the whole war. Six DLI went across and started advancing up towards Giel. But 8 DLI were now having problems from their right flank. 6 DLI had passed through them and were advancing up towards Giel, but 8 DLI were being shot at from their right flank. And so I then got my number 3 platoon, commanded by Dupre, and sent it off about a mile to the right of the 8 DLI bridgehead, where for the next 36 hours it fought a little lone war with the Germans on the other side of the canal, the ones who had been interfering with the 8 DLI bridgehead by fire. Initially the Germans were extremely aggressive, but after 3 platoon had knocked out 2 Spandaus and a 20mm gun, they then quieted down very considerably. Dupre borrowed a 2-inch mortar from the 6 DLI, and with it he then bombarded the German positions, the other side of the canal, which were only about 40 yards away. And as they tried to run from these bursting mortar bombs, the guns shot them down. And the following day, I went with Dupre to have a look at the area, and we found the village schoolmaster, who said that there had been about 100 soldiers, mixed Russians, Czechs, and all sorts, over the other side, that we had killed about 11 and 23 had been wounded, and the rest had wanted to give up. But every time they started to get out of their holes to show a white flag, they got shot up by it, so they hadn't been able to. Well, by late afternoon on the 10th of September, the 6th DLI had got into Giel itself. They had met a German counterattack coming down the road from Giel towards them, but had brushed them aside and had got into Giel itself. And the only worry now appeared to be that there was a gap, still on 1,000 yards, between 8 DLI and 69 Brigade. And this worried the brigade commander. So he ordered 8 DLI to move forward from their positions around the bridgehead at Steedland and to link up more closely with 69 Brigade. And 8 DLI started moving up just about dusk, not knowing that simultaneously the Germans, in the shape of we thought at the time Hitlerjugend, but where in fact I think German Air Force regiments, supported by parachutists, were deciding to make use of the gap between 69th Brigade and 8th DLI to infiltrate behind 8th DLI. And so as 8th DLI went up forward, the Germans hit the road in which they were advancing behind the forward companies, and in fact hit it just by dusk, when the support column, the supporting the mortars and the anti-tank guns and so on, were moving forward. And they came snap on top of this column and brewed most of it up. And the Germans not only had infantry in some strength, but they also had about 7 tanks and some SB guns, 88mm guns and so on with them. And so there was suddenly, as the dusk came down, there was suddenly absolute and complete confusion. Brigade headquarters, which I was with, had moved across the canal just before dark and was in position just south of the Dawn Boom crossroads. My 4 platoon, which was with the DLI, was in fact in position on the left of the of where the and really moved into position left where the left flank where the DLI were due to go, so that they would be able to cover the gap between the DLI and 69 Brigade. So they were already up there. My TAC headquarters moved across with Brigade headquarters across the canal, and I went along to see the Brigadier in his unarmored command vehicle to ask him, in view of this rather nasty situation which seemed to be brewing up, how I could might use, how he'd like me to use my 3 platoon, Dupre, who I had now extracted from their lone battle further along the canal. And it was, I found in the UCV, the commander of 8th DLI, and he told the Brigadier that he, quite frankly, didn't know where his companies were and wanted to know what to do. And Brigadier Gordon said, do. My original orders were, my original orders stand. You will get your companies where they should be at once. So out went the unfortunate battalion commander into the blackness with bullets and things whistling around tracer. And there was a heavy crunch of mortars and shells and grenades going off and burning houses lighting the sky. German infantry were firing very lights, and in the glare from these lights, their German tanks were picking out our own tanks and bringing them up. And it was a real sort of Dante's Inferno situation. While way up forward, 6th DLI were happily sitting in Giel, and somewhere 8th DLI were, and somewhere was my 4 platoon, waiting for the DLI to 8th DLI to come up and join them. So I had a word with the brigade commander, and he said that he would like my 3 platoon to be put in position just to the west of the Dawn Boom crossroads, where they should be in a better position to prevent further infiltration. First thing in from that flank in the morning. Well, my 4 platoon now came up on the air, Lieutenant Wood, Wee Georgie Wood, as he was known, and he said that he got a Tiger tank 100 yards from his position, and he was engaging German infantry who were occupying the same hedgerow as himself, and his guns, and he was, they were exchanging hand grenades. And there were none of ADLI had failed to materialise, and what should he do, please? Because things weren't looking terribly happy. So I ordered him over the radio to try and disengage his platoon about 300 yards away to their right flank, and said I would meet him if he could make his way down to the Dornbroom crossroads where I was about to set off with Dupre to recce or try and find a position for him to put his guns into for the flank protection job the next morning. So off we set, and we just reached the Dornbroom crossroads where the rendezvous was, where Dupre and I were going to meet Wood. There was absolute pandemonium going round the house, and I could hear civilians screaming, and as I appeared cautiously around the side of the house, there was shouting in a foreign language, a tremendous explosion, and a carrier went up in flames, and then round the end of the house, clearly visible in the light of the flames, came the German infantry. So I shouted a couple of times for Lieutenant Wood without success, and I felt that there no useful purpose could be served by remaining there. So Dupre and I withdrew in good order back towards brigade headquarters. In fact, Wood, accompanied by Sergeant Pickin, one of his sergeants, had arrived at the IV from another flank, from the other flank at exactly the same time. And Pickin had got wounded when the carrier went up in flames, but he and Dupe and Wood had been able to get away, and so I was able to contact him on the wireless when he got back, and I just told him to sit it out till morning. Make a little strong point, and to gather together there any stragglers from the ADLI who he might find, and who might give him a bit of protection. In the meantime, while I'd been away, Brigade Headquarters had very wisely withdrawn to the other side of the canal, back from whence they had started. Because there was not much point in having this enormous armoured command vehicle with bullets and things whistling round it and trying to control the battle. But by this time there was also quite heavy mist coming down over the canal, and so I decided I was going to stay where I was for the night and see what happened. Well, Dupre managed to get up into his allotted position under cover of darkness, and when first light came next morning, there was heavy mist everywhere, and the brigade commander ordered everyone to stand firm wherever they might be and wait and see what the situation was when the visibility improved. As the mist cleared, the enemy tanks again started to take heavy tank toll of our tanks and transport. They were well concealed in some houses or near some houses. None of our own anti-tank guns could bring the guns to bear on them. And each time one of our own tanks tried to get a line on enemy tanks, it promptly shot up and knocked out. One German tank commander who kept standing up in his turret shouting orders to the infantry, his infantry around about, and periodically saying, "I want to die for Hitler" in English, had his wish fulfilled by one of my platoons. But as the mist cleared even more, Dupre spotted a Tiger tank 120 yards from his position, which was facing the opposite direction. And he crawled up to a Sherman tank not far away and directed the gun of the Sherman onto the Tiger, which was hit first shot and blew up. And this seemed to mark the turn of the battle. The enemy seemed at this point to realize that he was in a very sticky position and started to withdraw. And of course, as soon as the enemy tanks came out of their hiding places and the infantry came out of their hiding places, they began to make very good targets for our own tanks and for our own machine guns. For example, Dupre spotted two parties, about 50 Germans, infantry, moving back away from us behind a Mark IV tank. And they fired at the infantry with their machine guns, and the German infantry went to ground. The tank then turned round and came back in a menacing way to try and deal with the machine guns. But the platoon sergeant of 3 Platoon, Sergeant Cleeter, crawled up onto the top of the Sherman, directed the gun onto the tank, which the Mark IV, which caught fire. And 3 Platoon then with their gun, mounted their guns on their carriers, on their pin gun carriers, and drove in a line, extended line, straight for where the German infantry were, firing their guns. And they killed 15, wounded 20, and 60, and gave themselves up. And it was said that the ground looked like a ploughed field, so scored was it by our bullets. And by about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, the enemy were all accounted for. Hardly a single man, I think, of the enemy force escaped, and none of their tanks or SP guns did so. There were German dead lying everywhere around the area, and also very much so around where brigade headquarters had been the previous night. So their evacuation had been rather sensible. And I went into a barn and found a young German soldier hiding in the straw. He'd been wounded. I was feeling very, very angry because one of my best soldiers, Private Price, had been killed during the night, only yards from this barn, or practically outside it. And I thought this young man, was probably partly responsible. And Price was a splendid chap who had been with me right through the war. And I felt really, really hopping mad. And I remember pointing my Luger at this young chap and shouting at him in fury. But he was terribly young. He was wounded. And I put my gun away. He said he was only 17. He'd been in the army 3 months. After he got wounded, his friends had stripped him of everything of value, including his watch, money, and his pistol. And so I simply took him prisoner. But that again was one of those times when one is so angry that one is not really in control of oneself. Or hardly. Well, that was the end of that little battle, and that night we were relieved by another division.
What day was that?
What day?
Yes.
That must have been on the 11th of September. I had a congratulatory message from Colonel Mark O'Keeling, who was still commanding us, written on the 20th of September, when she said, "I have been much impressed by the excellent work done by your company during the exceptionally severe battle of the Geel Bridgehead. It is evident from reports which I have received from the Brigadier 151 Infantry Brigade and other sources that officers, NCOs and men behaved with the greatest gallantry and played a major part in beating off very fierce enemy counterattacks." And I'm attaching sufficient copies of this letter to enable you to send one to each platoon commander to be read out to the men, as I would like them to know how much I appreciate the fine work which they have done. Well, that was quite something from Marco Keeling, but I knew perfectly well that he was not going to recommend anybody for awards. So I got the brigade commander, Desmond Gordon, to agree that if I put in some recommendations, he would pass them through the brigade list. I put both Dupre and Wood in for military crosses, and Dupre duly got one, but Wood didn't. There was an awful lottery in these things. But certainly both of them and their NCOs and a lot of their soldiers deserved something for what they had achieved during that time. On September the 13th, the company still was 151 Brigade moved to an area near Pale, where we had 2 days rest. And during that time, we not only played football, but we visited a mobile bath platoon and cleaned up for the first time for a very long time. And we had an ENSA show. And the ENSA show was, I need to say, a great success, since most of the artistes were women, and there was a wonderful leg show. On the 15th, the company paraded at brigade headquarters to hear the Brigadier Gordon give us a talk on past, possible and future operations, in which he stressed the need for vigilance on entering Germany. So, but we still had to get through Holland. On September the 16th, we set off again for the area of Lommel on the banks of the Esco Canal, and went to position at Beringen near some chemical works, protecting the bridgehead from what I see in my notes were fanatically minded Germans on the far side. Here we were to stay, fighting off one quite nasty counterattack, until on the 17th of September we saw